Right now it is time for the Media Beat, and the Media Beat with David Derichak will come to you live in just a few moments from France, as a matter of fact. David, of course, has his own website, themediabeat.us. You can also find him on Huffington Post. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And we say bonjour, David.
Bonjour to you from La Belle, France. Yes, I'm here.
Well, that's always good. Could be.
It's always a minor miracle, isn't it, when we connect? But this time we're connecting transatlantically from La Belle, France. And I'm in a particularly rural part of southwest France. You may hear in the background the sound of Le Coq Gallois, the Gallic rooster. It's the middle of the day here, but the roosters around here seem to think that dawn goes on all day. So it's timely for you at 7:34 in the morning. You'll be hearing French cockerels, however.
I just tell them after we get off the air that yesterday.
They need to adjust their clocks.
No. Just 2 days ago in the afternoon. This is why this is apropos, not late afternoon. Yeah. Suddenly a truck pulls up, and of course the dogs go crazy, and I wave at who gets out of the truck, you know, squinting to see, and it's somebody that I know, and he's like, "Those damn ducks, they're loose again."
The ducks?
He didn't say damn.
I happen to be in duck land. Yes,
I understand.
There's almost nothing to eat around here but duck. You could believe that, looking at all the comestibles that are available. There's duck pâté, there's duck rillette, there's confit de duck, de canard. I mean, duck predominates.
I like confit
here.
De
if you
duck.
Don't like
that's
duck,
funny.
You needn't be here.
But what is interesting is that if you are in a rural area, there is a very good possibility that there is an understanding that you grow your food, basically.
Oh, sure, yes.
Yeah, and that's something that is
I'm very glad for it. I mean, nothing but fresh food. The idea of preserved food, except for long-term preserved foods. I mean, there's wonderful coffee tour. There's wonderful jam from this area made of framboise and cerise griotte, which I'm not quite sure. It's a form of cherry, I think. It's delicious.
Yeah, and
as you can tell, I enjoy talking about food more than I talk about, even more than I enjoy talking about media. But
so do we.
Shall we?
No, it's just because.
Happy to join you.
There is part of, and this is so lacking everywhere, and I understand that it is a business model and a business decision, though I'm happy to report, but I'm certain that you already know and will confirm that Trunk has realized that was a really stupid name.
Oh, the company that I used to, I mean, that initially commissioned the Media Beat from me in those days was called Tribune Newspapers, reasonable enough and perfectly understandable name. They decided to call themselves, what, 2-3 years ago?
Trunk.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's just like...
I mean, impossible name. And now they're backing off that. This seems to be the season for people, obdurate people, to back off their stupid decisions of earlier.
And I will just
not to include only our dear president, but he's certainly the most prominent example right now.
And he gets the most coverage. He gets the most coverage. But and just before you jump to that, I want to just briefly mention this thing called Theranos and a woman named Elizabeth Holmes. The three people that said, you know, this is really not a good idea. She got money. She got billions from people that, you know, you'd think would know better.
Well, money often goes from people who ought to know better to people who already know better and are very clever and canny about it.
Yeah, but that was one of the biggest biotech heists in the history.
Well, the biotech industry is well known for its very effective media savvy heists. I mean, biomedicine is and biotech. Developments in medicine are so attractive to investors, of course, that it's pretty much the territory of the scam these days. I mean, there are definite and very real advances made, and thank goodness investment will go to them. But it is a very attractive territory for the scammers. I'm actually in the throes of preparing a piece for public television about an extraordinary scam conducted. Well, scam's perhaps not the right word for it, but a set of medical procedures to test a new medical advance, new vaccine, in fact, which was tested on people in conditions that are just horribly unethical and far from the standards laid down in the aftermath in the 1940s, and eventually laws being passed in America only in the 70s, it took that long to develop, regulating the what's called human experimentation, because that's what it is. You're experimenting on human beings with your prospective vaccine or whatever other kind of medical advance you've come up with. It is tightly regulated, thank goodness, by Health and Human Services Administration. And in this particular case, for several years, a allegedly extremely unethical procedure was followed, testing a vaccine for herpes. And it's become a really prime case of investment going where it is arguably extremely dangerous for it to go, a totally unregulated series of experiments conducted on human beings, perhaps with their consent, but not entirely. They're informed. They're entirely informed consent. And you'll see that what that results in terms of my writing, and I hope lots of other people's writing, because it's going to be on PBS television in the latter part of the summer. I'll let you know when that comes through. It's looking at the moment like an extraordinary piece of a wrongdoing that's gone unchecked until now, that is.
And that's the wonderful thing about the that is the benefit of having a media, and you can now take that right into...
Yes, I'm very grateful for the establishment of an institution like PBS that will, in a slow-burning way, invest in that kind of investigation. It's a good thing, but very few media organizations will do it these days, because most media organizations are only capable of reacting to the immediate and presenting material gathered immediately, not in the long term. I'm very happy to be associated with something that is really committed to the long haul. In this case, long haul of several months, but it will take that long to establish every dot on the I and every cross on the T that's necessary for investigative journalism. And as I say, I'll keep you abreast of it, but I think this kind of journalism is all too infrequent nowadays and deserves every kind of encouragement.
We were speaking to somebody also from, he happens to be from UK, and he was over here for a little bit. And his family, it's very interesting. He's been back and forth for years and years, but his family's view of America is completely, you know, just contaminated by what they hear. The assumption... thank you, I guess.
You only hear the worst about America when you live in Europe? Is that the suggestion? I mean,
the suggestion is that everybody's wearing hoods. I mean, walking around with wearing hoods and
well,
carrying
crosses.
Well,
yeah, everyone's taking Ambien and sort of being...
Well, either they're taking Ambien or they're...
Is that a symptom of Ambien taking to become an instant racist like Roseanne Barr claimed that happened to her? Yeah.
But what he said, and this is the point, and it's just to your... the long term, you know, what it takes in terms of investigating something and putting it together in a cogent fashion. He said, you know, the real information is still coming out of print, as in books, because the time that it takes to put together, you know, it's not instant. It has to be. It's going to be out there for a bit, and it's important because it's still the fundamental source, if you will, of information. And I thought that was
sure. It's our job as a business, as a vocation. We are in the business of information, and it has to be accurate information, despite what so much of cable television believes. Opinion can substitute for fact. Well, no, we want facts, and we want well-checked facts. And it's my job as a journalist, and I hope all other journalists will go along with this too. It's our job to double-check, triple-check, quadruple-check every single fact we ever broadcast or write.
But the trick to checking a fact is because, and this is where it gets dodgy. You know, the fact checking in a funny way has turned into, it's like let's take a set, let's diagram a sentence, and then let's pick bits of it. Instead, it doesn't lend itself to the complexity of the situation. So you can take an opinion, a statement of opinion, for the fact that somewhere buried within, and you can say, oh, that's wrong, wrong, wrong. And it ends up creating almost its own hybrid that doesn't get you to the meat of the matter. And that's, you know, we know that I have a weird mind when it comes to that. And I just find that whole distortion really distressing. But other people find it informative, and that's what I find duly alarming. Because if somebody comes out and says, well, that's not true, then they automatically think that what that person is saying is true. And it's not helpful.
No. Fact-checking is, I mean, this sounds like a banal...
Sorry.
It sounds like I'm about... Well, I am about to say something banal. Fact-checking is the checking of facts. And that's what can be all too easily diverted into a succession of presentations of opinions, and counter opinions are regarded as some kind of
fact.
An alternative fact to coin a phrase.
Oh, that's good.
A phrase that came out of the White House, of course. We are dealing with a set of
alternative facts.
We're dealing with contradictions,
right.
Opinionated contradictions most of the time. It's been interesting to see the developments over the splitting up of families at the southwest border, how that's been reported in France, and it has become very fundamental, I say. You move past the notion of opinions that will run counter to certain facts, and you're now into, as far as the many of the French media are concerned right now, into an area where you say fundamental values are at odds with facts developing now. I'm in the country now that sent the United States the Statue of Liberty, so they feel they have some claim on the fundamental values that we are said to share, and you know, ever since the French Revolution and its echoes in the, you know, the echoes between the French Revolution and the American Revolution have created a very strong fellow feeling between France and the United States about what those fundamental values are. I mean, they're stated, for instance, in that poem that has become the inscription at the foot of the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I will lift my lamp beside the golden door. That's what Lady Liberty is saying. So the French and the French media have gotten very exercised by this, as you might imagine, at the business of immigrants, undocumented immigrants, yes, illegals, you might call them, and many people do call them that, being split apart from their children if they're accompanied by children when they cross the border. And on the horrors that is conjured up and that has been flooding through American media, has been flooding through French media too, but it's prompted the French media to, I mean, they turn as, you know, it's interesting, the Europeans do this, the European Broadcasting Institution in particular, France 2, television channel, turns to the official government spokesman here. President Macron's spokesman is called Benjamin Griveaux. The television channel turned to him for something like an expression of French feeling about this. You know, we must have a national response to this behavior by the American administration. It's interesting that they should want to do that. And we've ended up with this very extraordinary an pronouncement by the French official spokesman saying about America, about France and America. Let me quote him directly. He said on television, "We, the French, don't have the same model of civilization as today's America," is what he's saying. We do not share certain values. And of course, the French, being a philosophical nation, you know, this is a very major matter for the French. America's are just not behaving like a civilized state anymore. They're not adhering to the civilized values that the French and the Americans have for a long time said that they share. And of course, you know, only recently, only 2 months ago, when President Macron was on a state visit to America and was at the White House, President Trump himself was talking about this friendship and sharing of values being unbreakable. Well, now it's sure as heaven and hell been broken.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the French don't ask for the statue back.
Well, yeah, they might have a right to, you could say. Well, not that the French are entirely without stain themselves. And
no,
Europe as a whole is extremely recalcitrant about those basic values, which both the European Union and the United States are said to have stood by for so long. Of course, immigration is the issue that is causing a lot of challenging to those basic values, the welcoming, for instance, of the huddled masses. Italy has not been a shining example of that at all this last week.
No, the Aquarius is not.
But you know, it's not only
The Aquarius ship full of refugees and asylum seekers. Turned away by Italy, and it's very Trumpish. I think that's fair to say, a Trumpish administration.
Well, let me
just quote you a new Italian word that's been coined this in these last weeks. The Italians are great at adding on extra word endings. So let me pronounce this correctly. Trumpazzaccio is now the adjective that they use Italian commentators for the Italian government, which is basically a right wing coalition. We would say only Trumpish, but they can extend it to Trumpazzaccio. Yeah. That's what we're dealing with in Southern Europe.
You can look at the ebb and flow of history, and Jim Lynch pointed this out yesterday. It slips my mind, and Avi Dresner also pointed out to me, when America turned away in the Second World War,
that ship of Jews,
a whole 600 people on a ship of Jews, and turned it away. Politics has a horrible way of infecting smart thinking and reasonable thinking about immigrants at various times. And various
places
in history.
Sometimes you really have to go back to basics, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in this particular case, the result, the unintended consequence, I'm sure, or at least I hope, I'm sure, that they were unintended of children right down to the tender age, as I gather it's officially called, right down to infants being put in cages. That's essentially the visual message that's come out of this. That is so much at odds with expressed ideals. It has become a remarkable piece of media spread outrage, and one can't be surprised by that. And you know, the people who gave us the Statue of Liberty have some right to say that hey, the basic ideals that underlay that gift are being terribly compromised now.
And you can tell how the world has changed, but and how things have changed for most people who don't know what Ellis Island is. And unfortunately, I bet you that's probably 33 or 40% of the population. People should look up Ellis Island, which is adjacent to the Statue of Liberty, and understand what that is. But also the difference between immigration and people looking for asylum. There has always been a big difference in that. And now those two have really been confused.
Conflated.
And put into one single stream.
Which is really
a huge, huge problem.
Huge. And trying to – I don't even know how you're going to get those horses back to the barn.
And the idea that
– Well, yes. I want some enterprising media outfit ought to do a straightforward public opinion poll on one phrase and see what it means to people anymore.
Yeah.
America was once called, and this is a label that stuck for a long time. I wonder if people recognize it now and would even give it any legitimacy in their own thinking. The phrase is a nation of immigrants.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look at it, and when you look at what most people think that the crisis is over, but now that you're going to have families actually arrested at the border together. And you're looking at three or four different military bases, so you can house 20.
How many people?
So you can house 20,000 to 30,000 people. There's no answer that has been provided yet.
Right, and you're waiting. I had a friend who used to say waiting, yeah. Meaning.
And the Congress and the House, they just punted the ball down on immigration reform. They're not going to vote on it this week because there's not enough votes. Because they don't want to work with the Democrats, and the Democrats don't want to work with Republicans. So now it's been pushed off a vote on this till next week. There is no answer in this country because nobody is strong enough to come up with an answer.
Nobody has the bloody guts, and it's really unfortunate because when you get down to regular people outside the media, I'm sorry.
Regular people inside the media too, but their voices are somewhat overwhelmed by the media voices of the intemperate.
Well, the problem with the intemperate and with everything is once you get outside of that echo chamber, let's just say, you've got regular people who have to solve regular problems and who are looking at this going, guys, you know, we have to solve problems too. How about getting to it? In other words, shut the bleep up, do something.
Well, it's not going to happen this week.
I understand. But the point is that's what – somebody should do a survey and find out what, in quotes, real people are thinking and talking about. That's all. I'm also told that that's all. So thank you very much, David Tereshchuk.
The hook is out for us. Apparently. Media's rules are absolutely intransigent. If you overrun your time, you overrun your time.
So meanwhile, have fun.
I intend to.
Okay,
good to talk with you again.
Likewise. Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
And the Media Beat once again this week live from France.